Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 51 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Today's Friday, August 31st, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The Alaska Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer has scaled down its initial estimate of the size of a large earthquake in the South Pacific this morning. The center now says that the earthquake, which occurred shortly before 5 a.m. Alaska time, was magnitude 7.6. The quake, though large, is not expected to generate a tsunami. Nevertheless, the center says coastal areas of North America may experience non-damaging sea level changes. The epicenter of the quake was located about 100 miles east of the Philippines in the South Pacific, about 33 kilometers below the surface of the Earth. Again, there is no tsunami watch or warning for the North American coast at this time. Yesterday, we told you about developments in a citizen lawsuit against the city of Sitka. Jeff Farver and Mike Littman, representing the group Sitkins for Responsible Government, have been suing the city since 2008 to get an initiative placed on the ballot. The measure would require a public vote before the city sells property at Sawmill Cove Industrial Park worth over $500,000 or leases anything worth over $750,000. The case was brought back to life in April by the Alaska Supreme Court. Justices said the initiative wasn't confusing, as the city argued, and sent the matter back to the Sitka court for another look. Earlier this week, Joe Geldhoff, the attorney for Sitkins for Responsible Government, filed his argument in the renewed case. He's asking the city to allow the ballot proposition to move forward. The city argues that the language isn't legal, that citizens cannot bring forward an initiative that gives them the power of appropriation. But Sitka already has such an ordinance on its books for everywhere except the industrial park. So if the city argues the citizen initiative isn't legal, then what about what's already in city code? Municipal attorney Teresa Hillhouse told KCAW yesterday that an ordinance will come forward at the assembly table in the near future that repeals the ratification vote now required for the sale or lease of certain city property worth over $500,000. She says the assembly will still be able to ask citizens for an advisory vote. In July, the Sitka Assembly decided to stay the course on defending the initiative lawsuit. Hillhouse briefed the assembly in a closed session on July 25th. The assembly then voted in open session to continue its defense. KCAW's Ed Ronco spoke with Hillhouse shortly after the Sitka Assembly voted to continue defending the lawsuit.
Sitka and other communities have been faced with initiative-type issues for years. In this particular one, we deal with issues that are currently before not only Sitka, but have actually been decided in a recent Alaska Supreme Court decision involving the Kenai Peninsula.
In the Kenai case, the borough rejected an initiative that would let voters ratify any construction projects over $1 million. The Alaska Supreme Court said appropriations cannot be decided by citizen initiative, that only the elected representative government has that power.
And there are other issues, but the real merits of it goes to that whole issue, which is really that idea of direct democracy versus representative democracy.
I mean, is it too simple to say that the case boils down to the notion that it is the assembly's purview to spend the city's money and nobody else's? That's why we elect the assembly. Is that kind of...
That's it. In a nutshell, the court decision that recently came out, not only is it their purview, but it's their obligation to make those decisions.
Why not give citizens a chance to say, to be an extra check on a representative body?
Sure. You know, besides the fact we already have the current laws that restrict it, the bottom line is this: to administer a city, decide how to split the funds, do budgets, deal with daily projects. If you had to go out to a public vote each time that occurs, you're going to have a dead zone with the government. They're not going to be able to act. They can't timely move. So anything from, hey, should we spend money on potholes? Okay, let's set up an election right now with Alaska required to go through Department of Justice. That's a 2-month delay. You got to get your ballots ready. You got to get it advertised. You got to get your vote in. You're probably talking a 6-month delay by the time you decide an issue needs to go to the public. You can't run government and provide services to people if you're in that kind of framework.
And I'm pushing a little bit on this because I want absolute clarity. But this isn't saying that. This says just this one area, this industrial park. We are interested in how the land is disposed of, and so we, the public, want to say. So their initiative is very narrow in scope. Is there risk that, you know, that feels like apples and oranges to them, I think.
And what the court cases have said is any time the city has municipal resources and assets, that's going to include your money. That's going to include, it could be your utilities that you provide, your property, your personal property. Anytime you have those items, it's going to be up to the assembly to make the hard decisions and decide, how do I give this money away? How do I spend this money? They've got to consider all the citizen groups, not only those who just might show up to vote or sign off on initiative. But that's the way we're set up in our form of government. And so it has to do with all our municipal property, all our municipal assets. That's set by the Alaska Constitution that says voters cannot, by initiative, decide issues that deal with appropriations, which are basically assets.
That's Municipal Attorney Teresa Hillhouse talking to KCAW's Ed Ronco about the city's stance in defending a citizen lawsuit. Sitkins for Responsible Government, made up of Jeff Farver and Mike Littman, are suing Sitka to get an initiative on the ballot that would require a citizen vote before disposing of property at Sawmill Cove Industrial Park. When a 66-foot-long dock landed on an Oregon beach this summer, scientists and environmentalists were alarmed. The nearly 5,000-mile voyage the dock made intact was impressive, but more impressive and more alarming is what lived on that dock. There are two docks and about 1.5 million tons of debris still afloat in the Pacific. KRBD's Sarah Chicksaw reports on how scientists, environmentalists, and now federal lawmakers are preparing for what might happen when they hit U.S. shores.
Somewhere off the western coast of North America, likely floating around the North Pacific, are two large concrete docks, remnants of the Japanese tsunami. The March 2011 tsunami pushed four floating docks from the port of Misawa into the Pacific. One the Japanese were able to reel in, one that landed on the sandy Oregon beach back in June, and two docks not yet accounted for. The missing docks, and what lives on those docks, have long worried scientists. Marine Advisory Agent and University of Alaska Fairbanks Associate Professor Gary Freitag studies invasive marine species. Invasives clinging to debris like the Harley-Davidson that landed in British Columbia or the soccer ball found on Alaska's coast isn't what worries him. Freitag is concerned about what's on larger structures, like the docks.
The reason it was so damaging is it formed its own ecosystem. It had plants, it had animals, it had, you know, everything available. So it managed to survive coming across the ocean. Something on a buoy, the chances are most of the organism wouldn't survive because it doesn't have a whole ecosystem that can depend upon.
The dock that landed on Oregon's coast carried dozens of invasive species. And since there's 1.5 million tons of tsunami debris still afloat in the Pacific, the threat of invasives landing on Alaska's shores is real. Consider the environment of our own harbors.
You get down to the docks here and look at our floats and all the stuff growing on our floats. Those are the kinds of things that if they could transport across the ocean can sustain the populations and then eventually spread the invasive species. And that's why we're worried about it.
Of immediate threat is a brown algae, Undaria pinnatifida, commonly known as wakame. It's an edible seaweed cultivated in Japan, and you've probably eaten it before, in sushi, seaweed salads, or even miso soup. Undaria is an aggressive plant, having earned a nomination as one of the world's 100 worst invasive species. Undaria can interfere with and replace the native algaes that grow in an area. And since it's not typically in the diets of marine organisms that live in that area, well, they've lost their food source. Undaria has already been found on the coast of California, Oregon, and Washington. The dock that landed in Oregon was covered in it. Fortunately, it landed on a sandy, smooth beach, preventing algae colonization. But what if a dock landed on our rocky, expansive coastline?
That's not going to be the case in Alaska. If it gets into our bays here, it's going to have the exact kind of habitat that it would desire to grow and expand. And we have a coastline that there's no way we're going to prevent it.
Freitag says it's not a matter of if, but when we'll see Undaria in Alaska.
I think we're not going to avoid this problem. I think it's going to happen. Whether or not it interferes with other resources is another story, but I think we'll have new species in this area shortly after that stuff shows up. The coastline is way too big here.
And now, federal lawmakers are voicing concerns. Earlier this month, a group of Northwest representatives introduced the Marine Debris Emergency Act. The act is supposed to help coastal communities secure federal funding in an emergency scenario. While the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration already provides grants for marine debris removal, the act would expedite assistance. Back in July, NOAA announced it would provide funding to Northwest coastal states, including Alaska, to help with tsunami debris removal. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Administrative Operations Manager Elaine Buse Floyd.
NOAA has presented us with a grant opportunity for $50,000, the state of Alaska. We applied for the grant. We don't yet have word back from NOAA if we are going to receive that money or not. I think we're optimistic that we will, but here it is nearly the end of August and we don't have that money yet.
The DEC has contracted with an agency to do an aerial survey of debris on 2,500 miles of Alaska's coastline, a survey that is already costing the state $200,000. Meanwhile, Freitag is working with coastal states and other agencies to form a consistent, unified message on how to handle debris that does come ashore. Freitag says that if salvageable debris is found, the item should be cleaned with care to prevent the spread of invasive marine life. He cites beachcombers who scrape algae off debris and discard it back into the ocean as the most common problem. In Ketchikan, I'm Sarah Chicksa.
And one final item. All U.S. and state flags are lowered to half-staff today in memory of Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon. So in weather forecast today, sunshine, patchy fog this morning, highs around 61. This is KCAW in Sitka.